Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lights up on Washington Heights, up at the break of day. I wake up and I got this little punk I gotta chase away. Pop the grade at the crack of dawn, sing while I wipe down the awning. Hey y'all, good morning.
Welcome to another episode of Broadway Nation, the podcast that tells the remarkable story of how immigrants, Jews, queers, African Americans, and other outcasts invented the Broadway musical and how they changed America in the process. I'm David Armstrong, and this is the second half of my conversation with Rebecca Aplin Warner, who is the author of a new book titled The Musical Theater Composer as Dramatist, A Handbook for Collaboration. If you missed part one, you may want to catch up on that episode before listening to this one. Last time, Rebecca shared some of the fascinating concepts and techniques that can be found in her book in regard to breaking down and analyzing the components of a musical, including its principal and supporting themes, both dramatic and musical, as well as what she calls the shape of the musical overall and of its individual segments. And especially how all of that can provide invaluable tools not to just the composer, but to the entire creative team as they develop their musical. As in the previous episode, Rebecca Aplin Warner illustrates her concepts using examples from various contemporary musicals, such as In the Heights, Matilda, and The Last 5 Years. And finally, in what could be called the 11 o'clock spot of her book and of this episode, she ties all of it together in a case study of the musical Everybody's Talking About Jamie. Whether you're a creator of musical theater or just an ardent fan, I feel certain that you will find this to be a fascinating conversation. Here we go. You mentioned this a moment ago, modes of enunciation, which is another way of looking at it, basically. Mm-hmm. What are these and how do they affect the shape of a musical?
So this is another idea by Kofi Ogawu, actually, again, related to classical music that I then thought about in a musical theatre context. Ogawu takes speech mode, song mode and dance mode. So we've just talked about those as literal performance modes, dialogue and song and dance. But he takes them as metaphorical. So a song might be in speech mode, or a speech might be in song mode. And he gives each of them an intention. So speech mode has the intention of delivering information, and song mode has an intention to affect, so to strike us emotionally. And then dance mode has an intention of rhythm and having a sense of rhythmic drive.
And involving our own inner rhythms and our own response to that rhythm, physical.
Exactly. And so a song in song mode might be something like I'm Still Hurt from The Last 5 Years.
Jamie is over and Jamie is gone. Jamie's decided it's time to move on. Jamie has new dreams he's building upon. And I'm still hurting. Problems are mine. Jamie is probably feeling just fine, and I'm still hurting. What about lies, Jamie? What about things that you swore to be true?
So something that's really clearly there to affect us. The character is literally singing and also in song mode. But something like Revolting Children, for example, in Matilda, and that's probably in dance mode. We've got a song, but the song itself is in dance mode. It's all about the rhythm. It's all about the drive. It's kind of there to fire us up. And in that instance, create a kind of victorious, celebratory kind of feel.
Never again will she get the best of me. Never again will she take won't forget the day we fought
for the right to be a little bit naughty. Never again.
The choking door slam.
Never again.
Will I be bullied
down? Never again.
Will I doubt it when my mummy says I'm a miracle? Never again.
Never again. Will we live behind bars? Never again. Will we know we are revolting children living in revolting times. We sing revolting songs using revolting rhymes. We'll be revolting children till our revolting's done. And we'll have the trench full bolting with revolting.
Also be really helpful as a tool in creating shape and thinking, well, I want a song there, but is the song actually there to affect us in song mode, or actually has that song got a purpose that we really need some energy there and some drive and some rhythm? It does kind of really affect what you decide to write, the character of that music at any one time.
Any other examples of those different modes of enunciation that you want to share with us?
In the Heights starts with what we'd probably call an extended musical sequence. As so many musicals do, it needs to establish the world, we establish the characters, we establish what it is that's going on at the start of our show, like before the rest of the story unfolds. And so those sequences perhaps are most likely to include all three, like moving between them. And the beginning of In the Heights certainly does that. You've got Usnavi delivering quite a lot of information in speech mode, but then moving into song mode with kind of moments with Vanessa, and then the whole community being involved by the end, that has a real moment of dance mode that kind of kicks us into the rest of the show out of that opening sequence. So I think opening numbers, opening sequences often navigate through all three modes.
Because they have to set up the show, they have to get the exposition out, but at the same time, they have to excite us to want to see what's going to come next and to touch us enough that we get involved with the characters in the story, even before they get to, you know, usually the second or third song is often the I Want song, where we really get to bond with somebody and feel with them.
Yeah, that's it. But as you say, you need a little hint of that at the beginning. You know it's going to come.
Exactly. It's the promise of what will happen.
Yeah.
I'm a streetlight choking on the heat. The world spins around while I'm frozen to my seat. The people that I know all keep on rolling down the street. But every day is different, so I'm switching up the beat. Because my parents came with nothing. They got a little more. Sure, we're poor, but yo, at least we got the store. And it's all about the legacy they left with me is destiny. And one day I'll be on the beach with Sonny writing checks to me.
I hang my flag on this place.
We came to work and to live, and we got a lot in common.
It reminds me that I came from miles away.
Don't go away. Broadway Nation will be back right after this quick break.
And tonight is so far away.
But as for mañana, mi pana, ya gotta just keep watching. You'll see
the
late nights. You'll taste beans and rice.
The syrup
and shaved ice. I ain't gonna say it twice.
In
turn on the stage lights. We're taking a flight to all the days in the light for what it's like
in Washington Heights.
Hi, this is David Armstrong, and even here in Seattle, warmer, sunnier days are on their way. So it's time to fuel up for them and meet your wellness goals with Factor's No Prep, No Mess meals. Thanks to Factor's menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, or my favorite, Vegetarian, Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals. So what are you waiting for? Kickstart that new healthy routine with 35 different meals and more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week. so you'll always have new flavors to explore. And you can crush those wellness goals with dietitian-approved meals and ingredients that you can trust. Make every day delicious from breakfast to dessert with restaurant-quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, and blackened salmon, with no shopping, prepping, cooking, or cleaning up. With Factor, you enjoy effortless support for your lifestyle, choosing from 6 menu preferences that help you manage calories, maximize protein intake, avoid meat, or simply eat well-balanced meals. Here's what you do. Head to factormeals.com/BN50 and use code BN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code BN50 at factormeals.com/BN50, as in Broadway Nation 50, and you'll get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Do it today. So the next third or so of your book, it's interesting, a moment ago you were talking about the high point, which, you know, of course, in musical theater terms, we have 11 o'clock spot as the idea of the high point of a show is already there. The sort of 11 o'clock spot of your book is this section where you illustrate everything that you've written about so far through the process of breaking down and analyzing and seeing in action all of these techniques in one musical. And the show you chose for that is Everybody's Talking About Jamie.
Everybody's talking about Jamie. Everybody's talking about Jamie. Everybody's talking about the boy in the dress who was born to impress. Everybody's talking about the things that he wore. Everybody's listening because we need to know more. Everybody's talking about the boy in the wing because he's gonna be big. Everybody's talking about Jamie.
Why did you choose that musical? What was it about that show that you thought would help you illustrate these points so clearly? And it works well.
I think, as we were talking about earlier, actually, the theme of identity in Jamie being really important, I knew that I wanted to set a kind of broad question for that part of the book that we could focus on, as if to help maybe someone who was either analysing a show for an essay or because they were in a show or for some other purpose. You usually come to those things with a sense of question. And so for that question to be about identity felt really relevant at the moment. And I think Jamie has a really important message in that show for our time. So that felt really important. It was also partly about resources because I wanted to make sure that it was as accessible for people to be able to engage with the script and the score and a film version of it and a recording and kind of be able to access all of that as well.
To really be able to see and hear what you're talking about. What elements of Jamie particularly demonstrate the role of the musical theater composer as dramatist?
Jamie has a predominantly pop score, which I think is really interesting in this regard, actually, because pop structures are perhaps more block-like often. I know we were talking about building blocks, and there's quite a lot of repetition in pop structures. I really loved finding that within those structures, all of these things could still happen. I mean, I love through composed writing as well, but it doesn't have to be that to be able to follow drama. It can all happen within pop structures as well. All of the songs in some way are about Jamie's identity. And I think that so clearly is the score pointing to the universal theme about identity and about Jamie's acceptance of identity. And for me, the show kind of falls into two halves. It's like it's got two high points. One building towards the high point of Jamie's acceptance as me.
Which is the drag personality that he is creating.
Yes. And then the second half being about his working through acceptance to himself as Jamie New. The shaping of how that works in each half is absolutely there. It's really interesting. It doesn't mean that Jamie's the only one that sings. It's not obvious that it's all about Jamie's identity, but actually when you break the score down and you look at it, they are like branch themes all pointing in towards that central trunk theme, that universal theme of identity. The modes of enunciation focus on speech and dance mode for quite a lot of the score.
There's a clock on the wall and it's moving too slow. It's got hours to kill and a lifetime to go. And I'm holding my breath till I hear the last bell. Then I'm coming out hard and I'm giving them hell. I'm a superstar and you don't even know it. In a Wonder Bra and you don't even know it. You're so blah blah and you don't even know it. I'm like au revoir and you don't even know it. There's a path I plan to the promised land. You won't understand, cause you're my backing band. And it's a Jamie show, cause you're mad so slow. And I'm so slow, and I'm go, go, go.
Until towards the end, and particularly found in the songs of Pretty, so Jamie's best friend, and Margaret, Jamie's mum, they start to take us into song mode. And I think it's really wonderful how the shaping of that leaves that to this final part of the show, where it all suddenly becomes much more relational and about Jamie in his closest relationships and what that means.
It means something that's only yours to give. It means choosing the way you want to live. It means wonderful.
Kind of saving of song mode for that section, I think it's really wonderful. There's a lot of use of characterful orchestration, which is brilliant. In the film version, which I was particularly analysing, you get the 80s sound world for This Was Me, which of course isn't in the stage version. You get kind of nightmarish orchestration techniques in Work of Art. You get hints of military in Over the Top, and then you get a really stripped back intimacy for It Means Beautiful, which is just such a gorgeous song. And so I think the orchestration really tells the story. And also, just back to the universal theme and the theme of identity, I think it's really interesting that sung language in the show is used mostly for positivity about Jamie and Jamie's sense of identity. And I think that really helps in the importance of the message. So the bully Dean doesn't get to sing, the father doesn't get to sing, so the negative voices that Jamie has in his life aren't actually given space in the score, which is a really important statement, I think.
I thought that was really interesting that you identified that. I think that's unusual. Our first impulse would be, well, we need to balance the two polarities. You need to have the antagonist have his equal weight with the protagonist. But in this case, you think this was a great choice. Why is that?
I think because music and song, like we were talking about with intensification, it gives things more weight. When you sing something, you sort of assume it's got importance. And so to remove the naysayers, the negative voices from that weight of importance that maybe the score brings, I think is a really important message. It's a really important statement. It's probably working subliminally. We don't necessarily notice that consciously, but I think it's something really meaningful that's there.
Because it's reinforcing this central idea that identity is what the show is about and what Jamie's story is about.
Exactly. And that acceptance is there in the score right the way through. And it's then Jamie's journey.
The score is sort of subliminally affirming him.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you've come pretty far, but you know where you are, you're home. And the friends that you choose wanna walk in your shoes, you're home. Any day you feel your skies falling, look above, see a bright silver lining. Listen up, there's a new freedom calling, calling you to a place where you're shining.
out of the darkness, into the spotlight. There is a new star, shining so bright. Out of the darkness, into the spotlight. There is a new star, shining so bright.
So in this case, the composer as dramatist understood this clearly, whether it was consciously or, again, just intuitively, but understood this universal theme mm-hmm. so well that then he could create a score that would support that and tell that story.
Yes, I'm never meaning to imply that the tools and frameworks I use in the book are the tools that have been used for the writing process. I'm sure that's not the case. But they help as a framework to be able to see even what might be there innately. As you say, it probably is an innate process.
Or a combination of some analysis and just getting it.
Yeah.
Which is what I think is so valuable about a book like this, is you've put in the thought behind it to identify these processes that are probably going on automatically in the most successful and intuitive of cases, but you identified what it is that's actually happening. They may not even be aware of.
Yeah. And for those days when you get stuck and just not feeling inspired, this song's just not working. It's not achieving what we want it to. They're there to reach for.
I've been in the room when even the greatest writers just get stuck and just don't know how to move forward.
There's a place where we belong. There's a place where we belong, and you'll hear us sing a song in this place where we belong.
The final section of your book is a very practical, hands-on, I guess it's the workbook of the subtitle, a workbook for composers and their teams of collaborators. I'm assuming this is based on exercises that you have put into practice for yourself, possibly with other teams of writers, to see how this works.
It is based on ideas from over the years, but the bringing it together in the form in which it is in the book is actually new. So I haven't used it with other people in that full form. I've used the dynamic curve the most with all kinds of groups of people, as I say, from primary school children doing kind of graphic scores and drawing shapes based on a story and then trying to write music to it, and university students writing their own musicals. And it's something that I do all the time myself, little sketches of what's going on in this moment. So the dynamic curve I've used a lot, and I find really helpful as a problem solving tool.
So do you foresee yourself, now that you have shown yourself to be an expert in this regard, being called in on projects as a consultant to say, can you help us focus our work on this show that we're about to embark on or in the middle of doing or struggling with?
I would love to do that. I would absolutely love it. I'm fortunate to teach on the master's program in musical theatre writing at Goldsmiths. I love being able to help people develop their work. So yes, I would love to do that.
I would think at the university there, you will have that opportunity since you have those students confronting those problems down the hall, I assume.
Yes. Yeah.
Throughout the book, you emphasize over and over again the intense collaboration that musical theater requires. What would you say are the most crucial elements that teams need to bring about this successful synthesis of music and drama?
I think it's always coming back to the storytelling as key. That really is where, for me, everything builds from, that nucleus of the storytelling. And so that involves continual discussion, really, always drawing it back to the storytelling. Then for me, those two containers of really broadly theme and shape sort of help to then talk about all sorts of things within there. So you've got absolute focus on the storytelling. And then, are we all on the same page about what the themes are? And do we know what shape we're trying to create? And then sort of everything else can arise out of those.
I think that's absolutely right. I've been interviewing several authors over the last several months about various aspects of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Right.
And what comes out is that the weeks and months that they spent talking about the show before either one of them started to write anything.
Definitely.
By the time they started writing, they were on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, they had the advantage that Oscar Hammerstein was doing two of the jobs himself. So obviously the lyrics and the book are in sync with one another from the beginning. But Rodgers is right there on that same page. They were both responsible for the story, and that's what they worked out, or at least talked about in depth prior to sitting down to write, to put a note on the page.
Yeah, that's it. We're all storytellers.
So thank you, Rebecca Aplin Warner, for being my guest today on Broadway Nation to talk about your new book, The Musical Theater Composer as Dramatist.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So get up when you're down, because this homecoming crown has come home. I was lost, I was found, took the long way around, but I'm home. Got a song that we're singing. You and me got a drum that we're drumming. Listen up to the changes we're ringing. Nothing's going to stop us from coming.
Broadway Nation is made possible in part through the generous support of our patrons, including our newest patrons, Anne Welsh and Mark Stanton. If you too would like to help support the work of this podcast, here's how you can do it. A donation of just $7 a month will not only keep Broadway Nation out of the darkness, it will also provide you with exclusive access to the complete unedited versions of many of the interviews you hear on this podcast, as well as outtakes and additional content created exclusively by Albert Evans and I, especially for our patrons. And all patrons will receive special shout-outs and acknowledgement for your vital support for this podcast. To join, simply go to broadwaynationpodcast.supercast.tech. That's broadwaynationpodcast.supercast.tech. Or click the link in the show notes to this episode. Broadway Nation is written and produced by me, David Armstrong. Special thanks to Pals Mox for his help with editing this episode, and to the entire team at the Broadway Podcast Network.
Every day's a chance, every day's a choice. Even losers sometimes end up winning. So go and find your dance, go and find your voice, 'cause the party's only just beginning.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.